I really enjoyed your presentation, Mike, and this is a very difficult subject. As probably you have, I have been round and round with Ron Corder about this and the ins and outs of it, and about nature and nurture and all of that. But I think now, we need to be a little bit careful about how much of this we think that is natural laws are innate within man. Now, there are things innate within man, his ability to reason, his intelligence, probably his personality, the moral code, some kind of a moral code. That could be argued on some levels. But I think the laws, natural law itself, are the laws that can be learned from nature. So we think in Romans 1, we think, you know, he condemns them for idolatry. And of course, as you pointed out, Isaiah said, this is stupid. You cut down a tree and use it for firewood and you make a god with the other half. That's crazy. And Paul is saying essentially the same thing. He says that you don't need any kind of written revelation or spoken revelation to know that homosexuality is wrong. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. And then he gives a whole slew of sins. And one that I think is helpful about how this is learned from nature is when he talks about children being disobedient to parents, there in Romans 1, 29 or 30. God made man a social being, and he saw that it wasn't good for man to be alone. So he created woman, and then they had children. And very quickly, they began to relate to one another and live in villages because of protection, lots of things like that. It doesn't take very long to recognize that if nobody's children respect their parents, you can't have social relationships, period. And so this was something they learned from nature. And I think that if we talk about natural law, and there are many confusing things about this, difficult things, but we're talking about law that can be learned from nature or from mankind living in society or in the world without written revelation. But I appreciate your study.
Thank you so much, brother. I think, I'm not sure if you would agree with this, Romans 1 and 2 seems to be maybe the most clear section in the New Testament explaining this conceptually. So my question was, how do theologians or scholars who deny the existence of natural law interact with that scripture? Do they discuss it at all, or do they find reasons to dismiss it for you know, that some reason that they can dismiss that?
If you'll give me one more year and present this, the rest of it next year, I could study that. But I don't know, really. I mean, due to time and just the complexity of the issue, I dealt with those who did believe in it. And I don't know, to be honest with you.
Logan Shaw.
Thank you for the presentation, Mike. So atheism is a very popular idea that people subscribe to. But in my experience, an even more popular one would be agnosticism. And I know a couple people that subscribe to agnosticism and also subscribe to the idea of moral relativism. And to me, that kind of seems like a little bit of a hypocrisy, if you will. So you believe that, you know, the world is dictated by these laws, perhaps these divine laws. You're open to the idea of God, but yet you believe that people can, you know, they have their own moral codes. What's right for them is right for them. What's wrong for them is wrong for them. And I've struggled with how to open someone up like that to the idea of God or the idea of set law. So how do you think you would go about doing something like that?
Well, I want to be a smart aleck and say just punch them in the face. No, seriously. If you punch someone in the face, they're going to say, you shouldn't have done that. Why not? It's my law. You say there's no set law. So I can punch you in the face. Now, we wouldn't do that, obviously. But reason, I think, is the issue. I mean, we understand that that you just don't do certain things and that certain things are the way they are. And I think, as Alan was talking about, there's enough evidence to at least show order and reason. So the idea of agnosticism, you know, or no higher being, just, makes no sense to me. I don't know. Maybe some of you other guys who have studied apologetics a lot more would have a comment to that, but...
Matt Kuderna?
Everyone subscribes to some standard of authority.
Brother, I want to make sure I understand your arguments before I pose this question, because the question is meaningless if I misunderstood your arguments. But you made the statement that divine positive law, if interpreted correctly and if natural law is interpreted correctly, will not contradict natural law. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And you also made the case that natural law, in terms of killing a child, you made the argument for abortion or against abortion, but in terms of abortion, and said that natural law tells you that killing a child is not something that we should do. Is that correct as well?
Yeah, I would say natural law teaches us that life is to be valued.
Especially the life of something innocent like a child.
That would add another component, sure. The value of life and then innocence, but yes.
Sure. So when God commands Israel in, say, Deuteronomy 20 to... he gives them a couple options. There are two classes of cities. The city that you can try to make peace with, if they won't make peace with you, then you slaughter them and you slaughter the men and you take the women and children as plunder. But the Canaanites didn't have that option. They were to be completely destroyed. That's the infants as well. This happens again in 1 Samuel 15 when Samuel tells Saul to slaughter the Amalekites, which includes children as well. So if natural law tells us that killing children is wrong, how do we rectify the commands from God in these instances?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how to answer that. Has anyone read, Is God a Moral Monster? Have you read that? Does he address that? Trying to articulate. I mean, God's law, obviously, whatever he's directing at the time supersedes any other law, but I'm just puzzled here because that would be a contradiction, you're saying, between natural law, the natural affection that someone would have for another, and then God saying, override that. I don't quite know how to answer that. Anybody else have an idea?
Let's go to Jerry Dickinson real quick, who had another question to the city if someone has an additional comment on that subject.
Thank you, Mike. What do you think about Ephesians chapter 2, where Paul says, you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins, and then he goes on to say, among whom also we also once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as others. Does this have something to do with natural law? He talks about we were dead in trespasses and sins, and by nature, he said, we were the children of wrath. Did you consider that in connection with your natural law?
The Gentiles are by nature the children of wrath. Is that what you're asking?
What? Well, I mean, yes, I'm asking.
Well, I mean, by nature in the sense that they were Gentiles, I don't know that there's something inherent within their humanity that made them children of wrath.
Well, of course, that's what Calvinists and others would say. They had the fallen nature, but...
But they were Gentiles by nature. In other words, that was their historical
and
past.
And some scholars believe this is by practice. They became, by practice, the children of wrath because they disobeyed natural law. And so that seems to...
Yeah, I'll have to think about
anyway,
that.
Anyway, I just thought about that passage. I was going to say one more thing. I was thinking about Legion. Remember, he was naked. And after Jesus cast the demons out, when those people came out, he had his clothes on and he was in his right mind. And it doesn't say, Jesus said, put your clothes on, but he knew to put his clothes on. And I think that's... People know inherently not to run around naked. And so that's natural law, I believe. It certainly it's revealed law as well.
And that's interesting because what's the first thing that Adam and Eve did? You know, they hid, but they put... So is that something that they learned from observing nature? You know, or is that something they just knew? That's a good question.
Alan?
Well, on the passage Jerry brought up, I think that practice is the idea. It's a learned nature, and it's practiced so often it becomes what we might call second nature. It's not an inherent nature, but it's learned. As to what Matt brought up, I was thinking about your statement on the chart there, and you might be right. I don't know, but I did think in one response to that might be, Moses Lard was having an argument with people about carnal warfare. And it's not exactly the same argument that Matt was posing. But the idea was, if carnal warfare is wrong in the Christian age and Christians should not be a part of that, how do you explain the fact that God's people fought wars in the Old Testament? And Moses Lard's response was, when God tells you to go to war, then you can go to war. But until he tells you that, you can't. And so when God tells Israel to destroy a village or a people or the Canaanites, apparently with the Canaanites, they had become so overwrought with idolatry and wickedness that God would not allow his people to intermarry with them in any way. Even though they might have done so anyhow, they weren't supposed to. Whereas in other places, or another passage, in fact, it may be the one he quoted from in Deuteronomy, certain women that were prisoners of war, they could marry those women, even though they were not Israelites. But they weren't Canaanites. And so you've got God pronouncing a judgment against the people and using his nation, Israel, to enact that judgment. I don't know how that goes along with what you said, but...
Well, and I agree. God can override anything in nature. I guess what threw me with Matt's question was, because I had made the statement that there's no contradiction. And when he said that, it's like, in my mind, it's going off there. Well, there is a contradiction there, so how do we harmonize that? So... I guess God's law would always supersede. But, you know, God told Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. Well, that's not natural for a father to do that. And yet we won't call God unjust for telling him to do that.
Well, I was just thought of when I sat down about polygamy. As you pointed out, natural law doesn't say that it's wrong to have more than one wife because it was approved by God. Even under the law, the Levirate law allowed, even commanded polygamy. But it's always been wrong for someone to have someone else's wife. That's always been wrong, and you can learn that from nature. And that's because society can't exist if everybody's stealing everybody else's wife.
Let's go to Chad Cranfield and then Shahe.
Always, I appreciate your comments, Brother Mike. Thank you for doing this. My question is really just something I just kind of want you to think about and, of course, answer it as well as you can. We find the writings of Paul in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 9, and he makes a very curious statement when we start thinking about natural law and positive law about what we do naturally because it comes natural to us and what we do because it's divinely taught or what we learn from the Scriptures. Now, Paul writes to these Thessalonians, he says, but concerning brotherly love, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. Now, I have one blood brother that I can tell you that as far as my knowledge remembers, I've loved him my entire life without ever being taught or forced or any other way. And so when we come into the church, my experience with a lot of times with new Christians and as they grow, that brotherly love is something that has to be taught them. And normally it's taught them by other brothers. We teach them to love us and to grow into being Christian people. And it helps them to rely and to really put their trust in us as they would their physical family. I think this is the reason we see a lot of people that are converted. When they have problems in life, they turn back to the world instead of turning to the church. So I wonder, if we're taught by God to love the brethren, to love one another, would that be a natural positive law? Would it be both together, or would it still be a separate case that it should be natural that we then learn is divine? Just a thought.
Well, I think we do have to learn to love people. I mean, I do think there's a certain amount of natural affection that we have, and maybe that's learned, like Alan says, because society can't exist without it. But I do think we do have to learn to love the brethren, love the church. I think that it is a learned, I don't know that it's always just intuitive or natural because of the personality differences and things.
Perhaps I could maybe posit a suggestion and love to hear your feedback. Would you maybe agree with the idea that consequences to certain behaviors, natural consequences to certain behaviors, could also be an idea that's wrapped up in natural law? So a man, you know, destroys his family by committing adultery, or destroys his life through drunkenness or something like that. These natural consequences of certain behaviors help to teach us that some behaviors are immoral. And I think that maybe the statement, I'm no Romans expert, but Romans 1:18 says the wrath of God is being revealed, present tense, against all ungodliness and unrighteousness. So there are natural consequences to certain behaviors. And then if we then tie that to positive law or revealed law, there are also revealed consequences for certain behaviors. And I think what we see in the Old Testament with God using Israel to punish or destroy nations is maybe found in that parallel, that a revealed act of judgment is a part of God's revealed law that is consistent with natural consequences for immorality. So when God tells Saul to destroy the Amalekites in 1 Samuel 15, he says, I will punish them. The word is punish or judge for what they did to Israel when Israel came out of Egypt. It's not just that God wants to wipe them out. It's a punishment. It's a divine retribution. So divine punishment or divine justice is paralleled with natural consequences for immoral behavior. And maybe that's part of this same system, natural and positive law.
Very good. Very good.
I have a question. A couple. So, brother, could you comment on 1 Corinthians 11:15 and whether or not this statement fits into your subject, and how nature teaches what the Apostle Paul says nature teaches in 1 Corinthians 11:15.
Well, if you overlook the fact that one of those people in that picture is my daughter-in-law, you're talking about the long hair. You know, Paul's argument there is not only of headship, which I think is pretty natural when you even observe nature, but also about the distinction of the genders. I believe that when he speaks of natural or nature there, he's speaking of just the way things are, the natural order of things. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, like Alan said, to notice there's a difference between men and women. Now, you know, Paul will go ahead and give more divine revelation in what long hair is, you know, to let the hair grow. But there is a inherent distinction between the genders, and I think that's what Paul is addressing here.
One other question is from John 12:48. There's a concept that's quite popular in the churches of Christ, that the revelation of Jesus in the New Testament
The specific revelation Jesus gave in the New Testament is universal in scope. Even those who have never heard it will be held accountable to all of its particulars. This comes in a lot when you discuss divorce and remarriage, as well as several other issues. And for some people, the existence of natural law has been a solution to some difficult questions about how God is going to judge and how God does judge the conduct of those who have never heard the particular revelation of Jesus. But in John 12:48, Jesus says that the words that I speak will judge people in the last day. And some people, I've heard that verse quoted to say, there the Bible teaches that it is the words of Jesus that will judge all men, not natural law, if such a thing even exists. That's not going to judge people. It's the words of Jesus that are going to judge people. So I wondered if you might be able to talk a little bit about that controversy and what the existence of natural law implies about it.
No.
Oh.
Can you?
Oh, I'm just...
It's not my topic. It's a good question, but it's not my topic.
Well, beg to differ.
Well, to whom is Jesus speaking there, I guess, would be the first place to start.
I don't know. Anyone have a Bible?
But the thing to keep in mind is what I said, Clint, earlier. You know, what does law do? It will condemn, but we have to then ask the second question of what about the justification? What justifies? So I don't know. I'm just going to leave it there.
Well, I will say that verse 47 says, if anyone hears my words and does not believe, I do not judge him, for I did not come to judge the world, but to save the world. He who rejects me and does not receive my words has that which judges him. The word that I have spoken will judge him in the last day. So it's possible that the text there is telling us this is speaking of people who have been exposed to the particular revelations of Jesus. Let's go to Shah.
Let me make one comment. I think we do make a mistake, though, Clint, in that we take the concepts, for instance, in Romans 1 and 2 that deal with judgment and try to then draw from that our theology of justification. Paul is arguing that we're all condemned. Some law condemns all of us. And I think a lot of these questions about what about the person who's never heard about Christ are really, you know, they're just not relevant to what Paul's arguments are.
Just about a note about John 12. John's gospel is divided into two halves. The first 12 chapters are the public ministry of Jesus, and then chapters 13 onward focus on his private ministry to the 12, and then, of course, the scenes of his death and resurrection. And a lot of modern translations actually don't put verses 44 through 50 in red letters. They say this is an insertion of John, and this is John's summary. This is John's whole summary of the public preaching career of Jesus. John is encapsulating everything Jesus taught as he went about the land of Israel. And so I think specifically if we use that context to understand these words, then this is talking about the people who heard Jesus preach. The people who heard the words of Jesus will certainly be judged by the words of Jesus. And that's, I think, the context of John 12.
Interesting.
Where are we on time, Shai?
We need to wrap it up.
Okay. Do you have any final words? Any last words?
No, thank you very much. In all seriousness, this is an incredible topic. And what it's led me to do is start reading again a lot of those old philosophers like C.S. Lewis and all. And wow, I'm out of my league, but it's a really interesting topic. Thank you very much.